This is Erin Blanning, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Sharika Banton about her research and these interesting times we're living in for people science. So thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Erin. I'm glad to join.
Awesome. So I'm wondering, just to get started, if you could tell us about your research and your work and possibly what impact you hope your work has on your field.
Sure. So to answer this question, let me walk you through my journey from my PhD and my experiences during my PhD to my current job in the medical device industry. So prior to joining industry, I studied sickle cell disease in the vascular system for my PhD in biomedical engineering at Georgia Tech. And I also studied the same paradigm as an undergrad a few years prior to starting the PhD. So my dissertation investigated whether immature red blood cells release nanoparticles endogenously that could heighten sickle cell disease symptoms. And our thinking was that understanding this endogenous process would better enable us to derive much needed therapies for sickle cell. So for listeners, sickle cell is a condition that primarily affects Black people, people of African descent. So I learned very early on about the racial disparities that exist in science and healthcare by virtue of studying this disease. First, when we overlay the historical experiences of people of African descent with respect to racism. And second, unfortunately, this is often the case that conditions and diseases that affect minority groups are often lesser studied, or the research tends to go more underfunded. So this was an added component of my research training very early on, really understanding the social components of my work. And building off of that, during my PhD, I also studied science policy because I was very curious to learn about how our country's science and innovation system is structured. And I really wanted to explore why we do science the way we do. So a series of experiences led to me interning at the National Science Foundation, which is one of our federal science agencies in DC. And it was there that I got firsthand understanding of our science and innovation system at play, how decisions are made, how programs are created and sustained, how funding priorities are determined. It's also where I gained a lot of appreciation for the interplay between science and the broader social issues, such as, you know, what we actually call science's social contract with the public, since basic research is publicly and taxpayer funded. And so actually the social contract is something we're seeing play out in real time today during the coronavirus pandemic, with the race to COVID-19 vaccines and the various public health interventions that are being researched and recommended to the public. So after completing my PhD, I moved into the medical device industry, where I now work for Johnson & Johnson in regulatory affairs. And I chose regulatory affairs post my research career because it allowed me to bridge these policy and science interests that I have. And so in regulatory affairs, we are responsible for ensuring that the products that our companies sell are safe and effective according to the regulations that exist for the products. So my work is no longer directly lab-based, but I do engage with colleagues who work in our research and development labs, and my responsibility is to navigate the regulatory environment so that the innovations that we conceive in the lab can be brought to market, and we in turn address unmet clinical needs. So this involves a great deal of understanding and applying the regulations that may differ from country to country, as well as engaging with health authorities like the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration here in the US, to provide products to the patients and doctors who need them. So my work is highly gratifying because of what I do has a pretty direct impact on the availability of medical devices that are used widely across the world. And it's still a lot of fun because I get to kind of feed my interests in both science and policy.
Your work is very related to, you know, what's happening today, like you mentioned. And I'm wondering, what impact have COVID-19 and the Black Lives Matter movement had on your research and your work?
Sure. So I will preface my response by saying that my views are my own. and in regards to the coronavirus pandemic, I think as most know, or I think a lot of us have probably felt this to some way, the pandemic has had a significant impact on us because we've seen life change quite drastically this year. So for the work that I do in regulatory affairs, that means that we've had to be a lot more strategic to weather the storm while also adjusting to working 100% virtually. So this has meant us adapting to this new work style while continuing to engage with health authorities to drive progress and get products on the market or keep the ones that we currently are already selling on the market. So from a business perspective, we've had to identify what our key and critical innovations and products will be for the future. And from the regulatory perspective, get very proactive about what pathways we'll have to take to get new innovations to the public. So that means either accelerating or decelerating initiatives as necessary. And so really, I think this is something that's happening everywhere in organizations around the world. And we're really challenged to have greater flexibility given how dynamic things are right now because of the pandemic. In parallel, the Black Lives Matter movement, I think, is introducing a social justice element to operating in the science and healthcare world that I don't think has been on everyone's radar, certainly not on the national and international scale that we're seeing. So in the spaces that I occupy, kind of questions and considerations that I'm hearing pop up these days are things like, what's the history of structural racism? What inequities exist in healthcare in our country's innovation system? What inequities exist within our company and how do they impact our company and our business? Are we developing and testing products with all populations in mind, especially in the case of clinical trials? And how diverse is our company from top to bottom? And what I find really interesting is that people aren't just stopping there. They're then asking, well, if we have these inequities and disparities, what can we do about them? What can we do to solve them? So I think there's definitely action happening within my company to address this in a meaningful way. Obviously, it's early days. But, you know, these early efforts, I think, are aimed at identifying how racism manifests itself within the organization and developing an action plan from there. More broadly, I think the Black Lives Matter movement is really challenging us to think more deeply about the social implications of our work, which I kind of alluded to from my early days of studying sickle cell disease. So thinking more deeply about the social implications of our work, not just in product or research outcomes, but the environments we live and work in, and the values and practices that exist in these environments that may or may not perpetuate inequities. So this doesn't just stop in our workplaces. This also applies to our communities, so our churches, our clubs, and even our personal homes with friends and families. I think this movement is really challenging us to first educate ourselves and second, address any attitudes that we may have that aren't equitable or inclusive in nature. So personally, I'm quite convicted to be vocal on this issue. So thank you for inviting me today. And I think that in the healthcare and science space, we have a huge opportunity to address the disparities and inequities that racism perpetuates, because our work touches people's lives so directly. And I'm also really encouraged by the corporations and organizations who are stepping into this space with great intention and a problem-solving mindset.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining me today. You said you're really happy to be here. So I'm just really glad to hear your thoughts on everything. Hearing you talk, you know, about how people are starting to question the structures that are in place and how they're a part of them and what they can do to make good change. That's really exciting to me. And so I'm wondering what excites you most about the uprising happening today?
Sure. So I think you've already kind of alluded to that just in terms of the greater awareness and rapid learning that's happening for a lot of people. And I think that's what's really exciting me the most right now. I really think that our country is waking up as we've been confronted with the histories and realities of anti-Black racism and really racial injustice in general. And so what's encouraging is that people are actually being expansive in their thinking, right? So we're not just having conversations about police brutality, for example, right now. But I think we're all looking more holistically at our culture and our society, and we're saying, to what extent and in how many ways and places does injustice exist? And so, you know, a great deal of research has been done showing that racism touches healthcare, science, education, financial practices, housing practices, as well as other elements of American life. So I think the opportunity to really tackle this issue is right in front of us. And this might be the first time since civil rights era, I would say in the 1950s and 1960s, that we're seeing such a broad awakening of the public on what the Black experience is in this country, past and present. And now we're having conversations about the future. So the seeds are being planted, which is just fantastic. And I think even better is that we're seeing the domino effect, not only in wins for Black people, but for other minority groups in this country as well, as this collective awareness and sensitivity grow in our country.
Yeah, it's really great just to watch people, you know, work together. So thinking about more structural things, what do you think is the first step in making your field more welcoming to people of color?
Sure. So as I said at the start of our conversation, you know, I currently work in regulatory affairs in the medical device industry. And then prior to that, I spent a decade in academia for my undergraduate and doctoral training. So I actually think the first step to making, you know, these spaces, which I'll kind of just generalize as STEM environments, so science, technology, engineering, and medicine, STEM environments, I think the first step to making these environments more welcoming to people of color is really that the majority of people in these spaces learn and actually acknowledge that they've not been welcoming to people of color. So by environments, I'm talking about our academic institutions, our research institutions, our hospitals, corporations, et cetera, that the folks there acknowledge first and foremost that these environments haven't been, you know, welcoming. We acknowledge that reality, which then allows us to identify the root cause. And from there, genuinely seek to solve this issue in a way that will ultimately speak to the wealth of talents and skills that people of color have to offer. I also want to add that in order to really get to this state of true acknowledgement, there has to be collective work done with legitimate funded initiatives and accountability from the highest levels of leadership. So I'm saying that because in my experience, diversity and inclusion efforts they often get pushed to the side and not integrated into the day-to-day operations of organizations, or they become the responsibility of the few people of color within an organization, or they are not developed or designed with objective metrics so that it becomes very difficult to evaluate outcomes. So I think accountability and buy-in from senior and executive leadership is absolutely necessary to really kind of push the needle in the right direction. And my final point is that this first step towards acknowledging that, you know, these environments are not welcoming to people of color should also be taken by engaging and seeking the contributions of the experts who have actually been working on this topic for decades. Experts who often are people of color, who have dedicated entire careers and produced very rich scholarship to provide evidence for why and how these environments are unwelcoming. So I'm jumping ahead in terms of thinking of solutions, but examples of solutions that have been raised quite consistently in this scholarship are, of course, increasing the representation of people of color in these spaces, especially in senior and executive leadership, facilitating mentoring programs, revising recruitment, hiring, and retention practices. And I think really just exploring the general organizational practices that may be making these environments unwelcome to people of color.
Wow, I think those are some really awesome first steps that need to be put in place pretty soon, if not already. And so for my last question, you know, from your experience, I'm wondering what advice could you give a young person of color navigating STEM?
Yeah, so advice that I would give to a young person navigating STEM, and as we say STEM, I think of STEAM because oftentimes we include the A for arts as well. So I'll say STEAM as well. So the advice that I would give a young person, particularly in the current climate, is to first take care of yourself and your loved ones. So whether that's emotional, spiritual, physical, or mental, do what you need to be healthy and whole and really ready to step into these spaces that we know are unwelcoming to people like us, and really make this a habit. My second piece of advice would be that once you've taken care of your self-care, then prioritize doing your work and doing it well. Be patient and recognize that success, especially in STEAM/STEM, often comes really incrementally, and failure will be a part of that. So stay the course and trust the process. I would say my next piece of advice would be that in the midst of doing your work well, then engage your communities. So that can be done through extracurriculars, internships, seeking out mentors, advocates, and friends, whether in your direct communities or maybe even on social media, who will support you. I think a lot of us who have kind of, you know, gone through the academic and these spaces know how effective and sustained mentorships, support systems, and networking are essential to career advancement. And so I think that it's really important for, you know, young people to build those support systems and networks very early on. And finally, if you are a young person who's interested in the social justice arena and really kind of stepping into these spaces where you can be vocal, my next piece of advice would be to serve wisely. So absolutely let your voice be heard. However, be very careful to contribute in places that are serious about affecting change, and be mindful of how you use and volunteer your time. So those are my, you know, biggest pieces of advice to young people of color. And I just want them and all young people actually just to remain ambitious, remain curious, and be ready to make a positive impact on the world.
Awesome. That sounds like really great advice. Thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure. A lot of what we're seeing right now with the pandemic and with the Black Lives Matter movement, and that is for us to all kind of step into this conversation in whatever way we can, whatever our position may be, and really start to engage each other to understand each other's stories, understand each other's experiences, particularly the experiences of Black people and other minority groups in this country. So that I think we can all collectively and as one country and one people arrive at a solution that will obviously ultimately benefit science, but I think the broader society as well.
This has been Erin Blanding, and today for People Science, I spoke with Dr. Sharika Banton about her research and these interesting times we're living through, and thanks for tuning in.